A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
James Bond is coming back to the big screen in cinemas in the UK, and we're hoping to go to every one of the 25 films. Join us as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our favourite British agents by watching them all in order. We hope you guys are watching them too, so please let us know your thoughts. You can find us on social media at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and our podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify, as well as video episodes on YouTube. Simply search for Really 007 Pod. The 21st James Bond marked perhaps the biggest change in direction of the series. We had a new Bond in the form of Daniel Craig, and a reboot with Casino Royale.
Part 2.
You know, I think I'll call that a Vespa.
Because of the bitter aftertaste?
No. Because once you've tasted it, that's all you want to drink. Well, that was quite a good line.
It was a very good line.
But you're laughing at it.
Not so much it as you.
Oh, well, that's fine. I figured out what that is. It's an Algerian love knot.
Really? I thought it was just something pretty.
No, you didn't. Someone gave that to you. He's a very lucky man.
You can switch off so easily, can't you? It doesn't bother you, killing those people.
Well, I wouldn't be very good at my job if it did.
I don't believe you. You've got a choice, you know. Just because you've done something doesn't mean you have to keep doing it.
Why is it people who can't take advice always insist on giving it?
You think I can't take my own advice?
I think something is driving you. And I think I'll never find out what that is.
Well, I was going to go on Saturday evening with John and Matt to watch Casino Royale, but plans changed and I'm now here on Tuesday night. Now, normally, if it's a Tuesday night, I go and watch it with the guys from Really 007 and often Sam Rogers, who's an honorary member, of course, now, of the group. But, unfortunately, that hasn't been able to happen either. So I'm on my lonesome, and I'm at Rochdale. I'm at the Odeon in Rochdale. Now, the last time I was here, the only time I've been before, was an amazing experience. I was full of a cold, and it was almost cured by watching Live and Let Die on the big screen. So that was an amazing experience, and I can't think it's going to be quite the same tonight, and that's nothing against the film itself, but it's not really that kind of tone, is it? So we'll see what I'm in store for tonight. Going into the film Casino Royale, I've had a very, very up and down relationship with the film. If you have heard our review, our really long review of Casino Royale, it's one of the two Daniel Craig films we have done a massive review of, then you'll know it's a complicated film. It's a complicated film in terms of feelings growing up as a Bond fan. When we were Bond fans growing up, we, of course, were well, it was, it, we're obsessed with the original films, you know, with Sean, Roger, and then Pierce, of course, as he came on the big screen. And we, yeah, we were not for six, really, when Casino Royale came out, because it changed it up so much, and it didn't quite feel like the Bond we grew up with and the Bond that we loved. It was more serious, and I still think it's a lot more serious than, say, License to Kill, which is another one that has got critical acclaim for being a solid character piece. This one is more serious, and there are moments of light relief, you know, for instance, in the Caribbean when he's playing with the keys of the car. I think that's a great scene. And there's great humour in Bond and Vesper's relationship. And it's going to be really interesting to see back on the cinema, because it was such a conflicting experience when I first saw it at the premiere in Bury, when it was at the Pillsworth, if anyone knows that. It's now gone into the town centre. And it was weird. I think we may have watched it before a night out in Bury. And there was myself, I think there was Harry and Math, possibly Rob, possibly Jack, and we'd got excited for it based on the song. And I still think the song is one of the best. I think it's so good. Chris Cornell, who people don't really seem to mention much that he's tragically died. That never gets mentioned anymore. What a loss. It's a great song. And I remember listening to that in the car for the premiere of that. And we were like, oh, wow, this is going to be great. Because we weren't really sold on Daniel Craig. We didn't really know who he was. We hadn't judged him based on his acting, just based on the look and the sort of, I don't know, the aura around him. But it was clear that you can tell when someone's had a bad reaction that the press are going to absolutely love them and root for them. So we knew that the critical darlings would be really going in for him, which was good, and he had that on his side, and it was time to deliver. And I remember thinking when we first watched it, the first half, it was like, wow, this isn't that different. This is a proper solid Bond film. In fact, it's a bit better than the solid Bond film, and that Martin Campbell is sort of redoing all the great work he did in GoldenEye and reintroducing a new Bond, but still retains some of that classic elements. I think it was the second half gets pretty depressing, pretty not easy to watch. You know, the torture scene, quite a few violent fights. The relationship with Vesper gets a bit unusual. I always go back to the scene in Como in the huge wheelchair as Harry's obsessed with, that the dialogue's a bit weird and it just becomes a bit on Her Majesty's but not quite as good, you know, with the sort of the music and everything. And then the ending, we were thinking, because it's still a Bond film, it's going to have this massive ending, this massive action set piece, because I remember Rob saying that the trailers in those days always used to show you little glimmers, to quote Christmas Jones, of the best scenes in the film, the most memorable scenes, the most iconic moments, and the big set pieces. And I always remember that Rob said, you can tell there's going to be one big one that they hold back. They always hold one back, and I can't wait to see it. And we were sort of really felt let down by the fall of a house in Venice, and it sort of had this depressing ending. And yes, it's in the book, of course, The Death of Vesper, but it just didn't feel like a Bond film, the last half. And I remember kids watching it were just running around playing in the aisles. They were completely bored in the second half, because it's not a film for kids, it's an adult film. And that is not that, I'm not having a go at it, that just shows you how different it is. So I was a bit annoyed with it, and then as it went on, and the Quantum I really didn't like. And that sort of set off my declining love for the Bond series, I suppose. So it's quite a personal journey. Now, when we started this again, of course, this podcast, that I thought, got to watch these films again in context now. Try and put your prejudices aside. Mark Kermode will always say, whatever you put into the film, that's what you'll get back. So if you go into it thinking, yes, everyone says it's an amazing film, appreciate it for what it is. Forget what's gone before and what's gone after, and enjoy it. And that's all the more so now because of No Time to Die, because you might think all the good work in this has been undone by the decisions in that film. So it'll be an interesting experience tonight watching it at the cinema again, because when I've seen it, I think I've seen it two or three times since we started the podcast, maybe twice. One of them was with Jennifer, and I really loved it, you know, and she was really into the film. She was hoping to come tonight, but she couldn't in the end because of work. And watching it through someone else's eyes who's being positive really helps you with it. And that's the case with any film. And that has made me feel a lot better about Casino Royale. Yes, there are still things that irk me. I hate that torture scene. I can't stand it. I don't like how he's laughing throughout it. I know that's the joke, but it just feels so unbond, and you lose all the tension in the scene once he starts laughing, for me. And the fact that there's no main villain in the last third, there's no base, there's no sort of big gadgets, there's no massive amount of humour, means you've really got to step up. If you're watching it like me as a proper traditional Bond fan, you've got to sort of forget all that now and just enjoy it for what it is. And I've learned to do that, and I think it is a cracking film. It's not ever going to be in my top 10. It's not ever one that I'll throw on, because it is such a difficult, arduous film to watch. But I do appreciate what it's done. I think with hindsight now, after the four that I've gone after, it's looking even better. It's 16 years now, isn't it, since it came out, and that has been a long time. We've only had four more films in that time, which is very disappointing. So I'm going to judge Casino Royale again on its merits, going into this, as we always do on the big screen, in the right spirits. We did it with Dine of the Day. Heck, we can do it again with Casino Royale. So I'll let you know how we get on. Say we, it's just me, after I've seen the film.
Wow. You've taken good care of your buddy. You know, I never understood all these elaborate tortures. It's the simplest thing to cause more pain than a man can possibly endure. And of course, it's not only the immediate agony, but the knowledge that if you do not yield soon enough, there will be little left to identify you as a man. The only question remains, will you yield in time? I want the money. Len will give me the account number, if she hasn't already. So all I need from you is the password. The password, please. I've got a little edge. Funny man, Mr. Bond. Ah! Yeah! Ah! Ah! Mm! Yes! 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 Now the whole world's gonna know that you don't scratch my balls.
Hi, Bob Foster here. Just been to see Casino Royale at the Odeon Derby. I've got to say at the moment, this is the absolute best Bond film, in my opinion, until we get to Skyfall. You would not believe that it was the same writers that wrote Die Another Day and then also wrote this. It's completely a different animal. Anyway, it's a fantastic, great, short pre-title, black and white, leading to the pre-gun barrel and Daniel Kleinman's best titles, which are based around cards and roulettes. And I absolutely love the Seven of Hearts being turned into, being shot and turned into the ticker tape of announcing James Bond 007 status confirmed, and the image of Craig at the end of the titles with the slashes across his face, which turn into the first scene in the excellent Parker sequence. It's an absolutely stunning cast. I don't think one character lets the film down whatsoever. Obviously, right from Daniel Craig, who makes the role his own, even though it's his first adventure as Bond. Mads Mikkelsen as Lechiffe is fabulous and creepy. Eva Green as Vesper is just sublime all the way through. You don't know what her motives are towards the end of the film until it's revealed. Katharina Monroe as Solange is so sad when she dies. And Giancarlo Giannini as Rennie Mathis. Again, he's a very good Bond ally who has got a huge question mark above his head at the end of the film. Jeffrey Wright as Felix is a great... You don't see an awful lot of him, but as we know, you do see him in subsequent films. David Arnold comes up absolute trumps again with this score, with the added hindrance of not being able to use the Bond theme until the very last scene as Bond climbs these steps and announces to Mr. White who he is. It's an absolutely stunning score all the way through, from, again, the Parker scene to the fabulous Miami airport scene, which is... It's fabulous. It really is. It's like a dance. It's really like a dance all the way through, until you see Bond smiling when the assassin presses the button and it's himself that he blows up. Yeah, that's all I can say at the moment. Of course, as you can tell, I'm on my own, so I've got no one to bounce off. Really looking forward to hearing what everyone else has got to say about it. I am with Kieran next week for Quantum, so we'll have a bit more to say about that one. But I absolutely and utterly enjoyed this film from the first scene to the last. And I think I always will. There's some great interplay between Judi Dench's M and Daniel Craig's Bond, starting with, "I'm seriously considering feeding it to those bastards," after Bond's killing of the bomb maker at the beginning of the pre-titles, and then breaking into her apartment and going to come out with her name. But then we eventually get to the card games, which could have been quite boring, just being shot on their own, but they're interplayed between some great action scenes, including the stairwell fight, and then the very tender scene in the shower as Bond sees Vesper all crunched up under the shower and he sits by her and comforts her. This is then leads on to the poisoning scene where Lechiffe's girlfriend poisons the drink that he has. And then this leads on to him going to have a cardiac arrest, and Vesper saves him in the nick of time. At the end of that, there is the short, fabulous car chase, which obviously has to swerve the car off the road because she's tied up in the middle of the road, which then leads to him rolling the car in a record-breaking seven rolls before it finally comes to an end. And Lechiffe and his men take Bond and Vesper to somewhere for him to be tortured, which is the most eye-wateringly torturing scene that I've ever seen. It makes you really shiver when you hear the thud of that huge knot on the end of the rope to his nether regions. After Le Chiffre is shot by Mr. White, Bond is then taken to the spectacular Villa Balbianello, where he recuperates. He then suspects Mathis of being double-crossing him. So Mathis gets taken away to be sweated. It's on to Venice and the excellent destruction of the lakeside villa, which was a fantastic model work interplayed by seamlessly with real footage, obviously ending in Vesper's death and Bond returning to service and Mr. White walking off with the money. Because of Vesper's phone call, Bond then realises it's Mr. White and he finds where Mr. White lives, which is called Villa Gaeta, which is actually is only a couple of kilometres up the road from Villa Balbianello. The scene where Bond shoots Mr. White in the knee, which then leads on to him saying his iconic Bond, James Bond, at the end. It's a superb film. Okay, that's it for me for tonight, and I'll be back with another report for Quantum next week. Okay, bye.
Hi, this is Steve Bird. Thank you to the Really 007 team for asking me to submit a review of Casino Royale, having just seen it on the big screen in the last few days. Only my second viewing on the big screen. I saw it in 2006. It's a film I've seen countless times, like many people have. What really stood out for me, what was different on the big screen as opposed to sort of TV viewings, etc. Right from the start, for some strange reason, the pre-title sequence really, really got my attention. And one thing that I really noticed was how Martin Campbell had spliced together the two very contrasting scenes that he depicted in the pre-title sequence. You go from the calm, authoritative, deadly Bond in Dryden's office to the brutal, visceral, violent do-or-die scenes in the cricket club toilet. And Daniel Craig depicted both those aspects of Bond's character really, really well. Superb, in fact. For me, what I really noticed was how the way those two scenes were put together really addresses all the criticism of whether Daniel Craig could or could not play James Bond. I thought he did that bit particularly well, and it was very clever direction from Martin Campbell. Of the other things that stood out, I noticed that I liked Vesper more than I had done previously. She seemed softer and more vulnerable somehow than what I'd noticed before. The scenery was obviously tremendous. Some of the scenes in and around Montenegro and Venice, etc., were brilliant. The poker game, for some strange reason, seemed to have more tension in it, watching it on the big screen, than I'd noticed before as well. But yeah, all in all, a thoroughly enjoyable experience. I really, really did enjoy seeing one of my favourite Bond films on the big screen. It was really great. So yeah, that's my 2.5 minute review. But thank you to the Really 007 guys for asking me to submit this. Much appreciated. Cheers.
Hello there, it's Andy and Yvonne Curran. And on Sunday, we went to see Casino Royale at the Odeon Liverpool One.
Finally, a James Bond film that I have actually seen at the cinema when it first came out. And I think I saw it twice. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I saw it twice on my first viewing as well.
We've been watching the Blu-rays and DVDs because we've not gone to see all the Brosnan ones at the cinema.
No.
And yeah, 2006 when Casino Royale came out, and that's 4 years after the last Brosnan one. So different.
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest tonal shift between any two Bond movies that there's been so far in the series. Admittedly, the world had changed. 9/11 sort of had just happened when Die Another Day came out, and I think it almost immediately
dated it.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the way the Bond movies go back and forth between styles, and I think Die Another Day was the most inflated it had been, and then they really stripped it back with this.
Bond kind of brutal, not unsympathetic, but he's gives a mission and he will fulfil it.
Yeah, as M says, he's the blunt instrument, isn't he? And I think that title sequence, or the pre-title sequence, in Black and White, where he's throwing the guy around the bathroom, trying to drown him, and it's a really full on fight.
But then it goes into the Chris Cornell titles, and it's a cracking Bond theme and beautiful, kind of with the cards swirling around.
I think it's one of my favourite title sequences, and I like the way the Cornell song links in well with David Arnold's score. I think the two dovetail really nicely with each other.
And the best thing from the Brosnan films gets carried over for no explanation whatsoever, other than Judi Dench as M is brilliant.
Yeah, if you try and dissect the timeline of that, it makes no sense whatsoever. She's now older in this than she was in the Pierce Brosnan films when Bond was supposedly older, and now you've got Bond starting off, so surely she should be younger. And it,
yeah, it's just the
role of Judi Dench. it sort of works,
but I think it's a good film regardless of being a Bond film. I find it entertaining. Yes, it's a long film and lots happens in it.
Yeah, if it wasn't necessarily a film about James Bond, it would still work as an entertaining turning film. One of the things you mentioned was the sort of the body image.
Yeah, you've got, obviously, a traditional Bond film, you've got beautiful women, you've got Vesper Lynd, gorgeous, and she's used sexually, kind of in the dress, to distract. But as an actor, Daniel Craig, as soon as he was cast, he was pulled apart. Kind of, oh, he doesn't look the part, he's too blonde, blue-eyed. And even in the film, he is the most objectified Bond's ever been. You know, he comes out in a swimming trunks, glistening on the beach, and then he's naked again, being tortured. So, yeah, it's interesting, his body as Bond
almost becomes the main object in
the film. There's a lot of tonal changes in Bond, and that's visually the most obvious, I think.
Yeah. At the time, I always thought that he wasn't that funny in the film, or didn't sort of do the one-liners, or the one-liners almost disappear. I remember being quite shocked at the scene at the end where I think Gettler, the guy with the blacked-out glasses, gets shot with the nail gun, and you expect Bond to go, ah, he was riveted, or what am I for him, or something like that, and he just drops the gun and walks off, and it's like...
Well, someone would have walked away from that.
he didn't do the thing, he didn't do the line, but... That coupled with, I think, the scene at the start where he's chasing the parkour guy and he's running around, jumping over everything, doing backflips, and Bond just comes barging through the wall and goes, ta-da! Hey, yeah. That's a real statement of intent.
Yeah, I say, being funny, there's quite a few moments where he does a line or a look and the audience at the cinema did chuckle and laugh.
Yeah, it's probably the most laughed. I think it's probably a bigger audience that... for this as well.
Biggest screen. Liverpool One has been in screen 8, and for Casino Royale they're in screen 3. Yeah. So they're anticipating a bigger audience.
Yeah. I think another one of the things that worked well with this movie, given that neither of us are particularly card players, the scenes in the casino, you never really lose track of what's going on.
Yeah, it makes sense. They're playing a game you don't know, but you can tell there's tension and you think, oh, they won, they're not.
Admittedly, they do mix it up with a little bit of machete action and attempted poisoning.
Yeah, then it'd get too boring.
And, you know, sort of trying to restart Bond's heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, the actual poker scenes work really well for novices like us that don't really know the...
But kind of my favourite scenes, there's a lot of beautiful locations in this film, and we've got a fondness for Venice.
We do. We went there on honeymoon and did spend a lot of time finding either locations from Indiana Jones or both the Bond films that were filmed there. We arrived in Venice on a water bus. But I think in our heads, we were both on a yacht pretending to be Bond and Vespa.
It's, yeah, a little bit of imagination and you're there.
Yeah, I was this close to sending a text message to the boss saying I've resigned. yeah, the scenes in Venice are quite special to us. Minus points for not including a double-taking pigeon this time. But
again with a double-taking pigeon, okay.
You can't have everything.
So what was the moment of disbelief in this film?
Well, Casino Royale's a great film. It's got lots of... Many, many good points. I mean, we do both really, really like it as a film. But jointly, there's one scene that I think stretches credulity a little bit too far. It's the scene where Vesper's in the shower. Bond comes in to comfort her. She's getting a bit cold. Bond says, do you want warming up? He reaches up to the dial on the shower and magically manages to find exactly the right temperature. That's his first night in that hotel room. There is no way anybody gets the shower right on your first visit. There's 5 minutes of faffing around going, it's too hot, it's too cold. I can believe everything else about the film, but that's a step too far.
That's why the 007. You've got to do two kills and work out how to use a shower instantly.
Yeah, but he's a better man than me.
You know, James, I just want you to know that if all there was left of you was your smile and your little finger, he'll be more of a man than anyone I've ever met.
That's because you know what I can do with my little finger.
I have no idea.
But you're aching to find out.
Well, I'm delighted to be back with Chris Eales, a.k.a. the 007 bookshelf, and also the man with the red trousers. Now, we discussed last week a very interesting Bond film, Dawn of the Day. Because we're doing this series chronologically, we move on to Casino Royale, which is a slightly different type of Bond film, perhaps. But yes, Chris, what's your history growing up? Now, you told us last week about Dawn of the Day. What was your sort of feelings surrounding that, what was it, four-year period where we didn't really know what was happening and then Daniel Craig was cast and Pierce Brosnan was replaced, effectively?
It was a little bit out in the wilderness, I guess. Just that weird, we don't know what's happening. Because for a while, Pierce Brosnan was still Bond.
Yes, he was still.
You know, and it was just assumed, okay, there's going to be another Bond film. We just got to wait a little bit for it. Remembering that certainly our generation had had that gap of Timothy Dalton is still Bond, and that just kept going and kept going for 6 years while they sorted out the legal paperwork tied up with MGM and I think Eon and some other companies around the Bond franchise. So it was that weird sort of, okay, we've got another fallow period to get through. And then there was this news, gossip, but still there was news. Casino Royale, going to be directed by Quentin Tarantino, starring Pierce Brosnan and Uma Thurman, set in the 50s.
Did you actually think that, was that actually said at the time? Because I've only heard that afterwards in hindsight.
I can remember being at university and that being in a lot of the newspapers and being sort of solidly talked about. Obviously, it all vanished like a fart in the wind, if I can say.
Yeah, I don't think Bond fans could complain about continuity if that happened, could they?
No, not at all.
It would be more like M has aged whilst Bond has now become younger in this film, Casino Royale, but that would be slightly different, wouldn't it?
And yeah, suddenly Pierce Brosnan was out and they were looking for a new Bond film and for a new Bond, and the whole who's going to play him circus kicked off.
Yeah, and that obviously didn't seem to last long, because after Spectre there was, well, that's it. It seems to be that Daniel Craig probably won't come back. Maybe he will. But we've had since, what, 2015, 2016, constant chat, haven't we? Who's going to replace him?
Yeah.
Even though we've had a film in between that, it still hasn't. Because we've had the clarity of knowing for, what, since 2018, perhaps, 2019, that would be his last film. As soon as it was announced, I think we knew it would be his last. So we've had loads of names in the frame, and obviously Idris Elba, I think only today. I mean, it's just getting ridiculous. He must get so sick of it, mustn't he? Asked every single interview.
I think he's gotten sick of it because it's gone on so long.
Yeah, and about a decade.
Yeah, and because it's gone on so long, he's actually aged out of the frame. He's no longer...
Yeah, according to them, according to these new sort of, under 40 and, well, he's tall enough. He's got...
Oh, yeah, no, he's got the presence, he's got the action, he's got the size and the stature. But yeah, he's just too old. He would make a great M, I think.
Yes, I've heard some... I think, was it George who mentioned that? Sort of how Ralph Fiennes was considered for Bond. It was quite good to have him then as M when he was a bit older. So that would be great. That would be a very, very good casting for me, because I'm assuming in the new continuity now, everybody has to go. That's logical for me.
Yeah.
Because I really like Ralph Fiennes, and assuming Bond didn't die, I would have wanted him to continue. I would have wanted Q and Moneypenny and all them to continue.
Well, with Casino Royale, they hit the big reset button, but kept Judi Dench. So
she was too good to lose. I'm sure that was it, wasn't it? Really?
Is Rafe too good to lose? Would he stay? Could he stay? You know,
I think part of the problem as well is that, I mean, his character was a disgrace, wasn't it?
What a mess he was.
What a disgrace. But yes, so Casino Royale, I think Gerard Butler was mentioned. I seem to remember that. There are a few other names who was a bit of an unknown then. And it did seem to be going to that direction. It was quite nice. And Dougray Scott as well.
Yeah.
The brilliant villain from the underrated Mission Impossible 2. But but we got Daniel Craig. And I'll be honest, I didn't know who he was. And I was like, brilliant. That's, how good is that? That it's somebody not too obvious. they've obviously put a lot of time and effort into thinking about this. What was your initial reaction to his casting? And be honest, you know, you won't get cancelled if you went to George.
If I'm perfectly honest, I really can't remember anymore. I think I was less concerned about his acting ability than about him being blonde.
Right.
It was like, how can Bond be blonde like that? No, that's terrible. That's not going to work. And just, crossing him off in that regard. But as far as, acting chops is concerned, he'd done Our Friends in the North, which was terrific.
Yeah.
He'd done art house film about Francis Bacon. I think it's called Love is the Devil, where he plays Francis Bacon's gay lover. So he's done sort of out there roles and then has come to the producer's attention. And then I'd want to say it was recently that they released his casting tape.
Yes, they did.
The Casino Royale. And you watch it and you're like, okay, yes, I can see what they saw in him back then. It was the right choice. I just, from the whole announcement, just remember the image of him on this boat shooting up the Thames, trying to hold on for dear life with these SAS officers arriving to the press conference.
I still get annoyed at that because I think that's one of the most Bonds he's ever looked. The most Bond he's looked with the suit, the glasses, the hair is a bit longer. It's very, the sort of Daily Mail stuff, isn't it? Oh, Bond is wearing
a life jacket.
I mean, honestly, it looked cool, and it looked cool on the boat, on the sort of mini dinghy, the motorized dinghy. I like that. I think I was more concerned with the. This is getting very superficial. It wasn't the hair. He just looked a bit. He didn't look like a smooth Roger Moore type. Do you know what I mean? And of course, that was tailored into the character in terms of blunt instrument, this thug or whatever, who needs to be creased out. But I could see where the media were going with it. They were going so overboard with the hatred that the critics were going to go the opposite way and overhype it.
Yeah.
And I think he couldn't lose in terms of the critics because everybody wanted to be proven right that all the fans were... Well, it wasn't the fans, it was more just the casual people who were sort of saying, this guy's never going to succeed, he's terrible. And I think that sort of almost went the other way. If you didn't like the performance, then that's nothing to do with the way he looked and that's nothing to do with the original reaction.
Yeah.
Because the way they've moulded this Bond is very different. There's two camps, isn't there? It's too different, I don't like it, or it's different, that's why it's good.
Yes, and I think certainly coming off the back of Die Another Day, it's different and that's good is there in.
Of course, yeah. And I think the producers were pretty under fire then, I think. Not, maybe in our heads we've imagined it was worse than it was, but it was really like, oh gosh, where do we go from here? They deserve a lot of credit for backing somebody who wasn't popular, who wasn't well known. I didn't really have much of a box office, which I think they'd think about more now.
Oh, absolutely.
And
but then there is history with this. There is they have a precedent of hiring non-names Connery was an unknown. He'd done like two or three films before then. Lazenby was a model from Australia. A charlatan and a liar. I love him, but he was, we know his history.
Yeah.
And Roger Moore was a TV star.
Yeah.
He was the biggest name on TV, I'll give you that. But, he had not done that many films. He was a TV guy. Dalton as well. And Pierce. Dalton was from the stage and Pierce was from American TV. So it was limited amount of cinematic experience. So to go with Daniel, who, as we've said, a handful of art house films and some strong, punchy dramas, it makes sense. And just looking to the future, I wouldn't be surprised if that's where they go to again.
Well, it's worked, hasn't it? Because I think the only problem they have is that if you're going to get more of an unknown, the actor is going to be more wary that they're going to be typecast.
Yeah.
But, of course, that has not happened with Daniel Craig. So there's got to be... If you've already had a route in of being an actor, then you've got that to fall back on. And I suppose now there's this agreement where... Certainly with Pierce, maybe going back, well, all of them really, they were allowed to sort of film in between a Bond film, weren't they?
Yes, yes.
Obviously, I dread to think how Sean fitted in all those films. I've no idea how he did it. I mean, he must have slept, mustn't he? In the first few years, you can see why he got fed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we did get Daniel Craig, and then the big thing, of course, was the book. That they were going back, they got the rights to the Casino Royale. Immediately, you could see, right, we've got a clear direction here. We know what we're doing, and we've got a new beginning, essentially. And it's something that hasn't been explored before, Bond effectively learning the ropes. I actually, for the first time watching at the cinema on Tuesday, I thought, now hang on, is the pre-title sequence, it works better for me if that's set maybe two or three years maybe before the plot begins. Because then it's like he's now in the field a bit more. He's got a little bit of trust under his way. And it makes sense now that the M's like, you know, she knows who he is. You're a bit of a blunt instrument. But I might be completely wrong. If it's completely chronological, then I don't know.
I'd always assumed that it had sort of spilled directly from one thing into the next. Because immediately after the title sequence, you get the Madagascar chase sequence.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole newspapers, outrage, M's being interrogated. And she says, I knew it was too early to promote you. So I'd imagine that condenses the amount of time. It's whether it's a couple of months that it passes in the title sequence, I don't know. But I wouldn't have gone with sort of like 2 or 3 years.
I know it doesn't have to be totally realistic, but I'm all out of killing his section chief or whatever. That would have to have taken a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's dive into the film, Chris. So when you saw it at the cinema for the first time, what was your reaction?
Absolutely blown away. I can remember vividly it was at the Odeon on Streatham High Street, which is still there, thankfully, and it was in the big, big screen, and I sat right in the middle with two friends and just lapped it up. And I'm pretty sure by the end of it, when the Bond theme was playing, I was giddy, properly giggling with joy. It was wonderful. And then I think I went back to see it again the next weekend. It was great.
That's so good to hear. And I assume your love for it has remained throughout the years.
Yes. Yes. It sort of No. It's sort of waxed and waned a little bit, just in a sort of, it's good. Oh, it's great. Oh yeah, it's good. It's never gone down in estimation. It's just that thing of, actually, maybe I don't want to watch that one tonight. I'll go and watch one of the other terrific ones. You know, it's always up there. It's always up there.
Because it isn't a Sunday afternoon Bond, is it? It's not. You need to be in the right mood.
No, Moonraker it is not. it's something you need to watch and concentrate on. There's a lot of dialogue-free action that you need to pay attention to. Otherwise, you'd be like, oh, how did he get there? Or what's going on there? Why is this happening with that? You know, you need to pay attention. It's not a background film, I don't think. Where does it sit in your ratings?
Don't ask me. The problem is I love maybe 21, 22 of them. And I can throw on any. I think it is, out of the Craigs, I know this will sound weird, but I think my favourites now are the first two.
Okay.
Quantum used to be way at the bottom for me of all of them. But we'll speak about that next week. But it's really grown, and I think one of the things that grabbed me again is the locations in the Craig films have been terrific, and I love all the Italy stuff, and I love how that carried through into Quantum, and it just felt like this is an actual proper spy. Yes, he's a bit gritty and he's a bit grimy and he's a bit dirty and he's got blood on him, but I got the sense that he was actually doing some espionage here, and he was off the beaten track. And it still has that Bond feel, you know, with these locations. So the casino stuff in Casino Royale is wonderful. I really appreciated watching that this time. I thought that was really well filmed. And the colours of those first two films. I know everybody goes on about Roger Deakins and Skyfall and it looks beautiful. But for me, I prefer the look of these first two films because it still feels lush in a Bond film. And they're not shots for artiness sake. They're actual within the story, they work.
Yeah.
You know the whole Sam Mendes lovely long shots of the back of someone with a light in front of them? It looks nice in a screenshot, but it just seems, oh, that's a film, isn't it? It doesn't feel like some kind of proper scenario where, like, M and Bond in Skyfall on the drive just sort of stood out there. It looks great, but it just, I don't know, it just looks like he's showing off. And I think that was proven with the, whatever it's called, 1917. Anyway, that's aside.
But it's funny you say.
I love the look of the first two, and I think, I don't know how to say it, Phil Mahou. I think he got nominated for BAFTA for the cinematography. I think it's beautiful. I really do. And the colours are beautiful and lush. And it just makes you enter that Fleming world and that but you just want to be in that world. That's what I got from
it. Certainly when I watched it last night, and you go from the black and white pre-titles.
Yeah.
And then the gun barrel, bang. And then the red blood comes down. But it's such a gory, vibrant red. It's not...
Yeah, you know,
with the previous gun barrels, it's just sort of that sort of a very sort of flat red that drips down. This is, it feels thick and oozy and red and vibrant. And then that title sequence, which is all block colours, and it's just coming out at you. And then certainly when he's flying into the Bahamas, all of that's the sequence that's there is so bright and colourful, almost too colourful. But in a way... I know we were talking last week about Die Another Day being very colourful and vibrant, but Under Control, that was in a cartoony sort of way, and this is more luxurious colours. You luxuriate in all of the gold, and the warm sunshine and all the rest of it.
And it reflects each part of the film, so you're right, you obviously get the dark opening, because that is a very dark scene, and it sets the tone. Yeah. But then... to see that amazing chase in the Bahamas, you know, the cinematography just lets you see all the vastness of it, and all the, as James, what's his name, the Bond experience would say, the Bond lifestyle. all that stuff is filmed in a lush way, you know, the suits and the poker and everything. But then when we get to the gritty stuff, it goes down a notch. So the Vespa in the middle of the road is very, like, low lit. And that works really well. And then we get, of course, the torture, which is, okay, slightly stagey because you've got a spotlight on him, but it's just down to the basics of those two guys in a room. And that's what you want. You don't want any distractions. Yeah. If that was in, say, a busy room, it just wouldn't work, would it?
Yeah, completely. And certainly with these, while we're on sort of colour and cinematography and that, for the torture scene, there is this very much... Bond is in these sort of lit in these warm hues, and Le Chiffre is in these sort of cold blues, and it really does sort of separate the screen in the way that they framed it. It is very interesting how they've done that.
And a lot of thought has gone into that. And so, yes, the film itself, it's an unusual one in terms of tone, because people sort of often pigeonhole it as it's a much more serious one with a lot more talking in. But there's actually some really long stretches of action in it as well. And the first half of the film, it's almost like a different film, but it's like a prelude to everything that the main story.
Yeah, it's certainly a story of, I was going to say two halves, but actually it's a story of three halves, if I can. Because basically, I'll explain myself. Basically, you've got the plot around the aeroplane, which gets us to the casino. Then we've got the casino story. And then once that's resolved and Le Chiffre is dead, then you've got the love story. And
you
know, it's quite clearly sort of in these sections. And that first third, where it's all about what is ellipsis, what is going to happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You could stretch that out almost to its own movie. And as you say, some of the action sequences are so big and thrilling and forceful that they could carry a movie on their own. My one gripe, I think, my one big gripe about the film is towards the end of that sequence, and I know it's ridiculous, but as a film geek, I'm sort of watching it going, right, he goes to the hotel and he plays cards and he wins the Aston Martin. That's early evening. He then goes off with Solange for an hour or so, gets the information, goes to Miami airport, goes to the Bodyworks exhibition, goes back to the airport where they're having the launch of the aeroplane. What is the time frame in which all of this is happening in one evening? And
And then he's back in the Bahamas to see the dead body the next morning.
But who does an airplane launch of a prototype? God, it's got to be midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning in Miami. Yeah, yeah. It's like, hang on, guys. You've pushed the clock on this a little too far, right?
And it focuses on, you know, chasing Demetrius in the taxi, but they must have already both had a quick plane journey.
Yeah, were they both on the same plane?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know. I think there are regular flights from Miami to the Bahamas because it is Miami is a point for loads of
It's a major hub.
Yeah, but they are minor flights.
I admit this is a very silly.
You'll have these ellipses.
There we go.
The Solange bit, then, so he doesn't get his end away in the end, does he?
No.
He does leave her, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets her champagne and caviar for one, and he runs out the door. It's all about the mission for him.
Watching it again, and I think I said this in our review, that it's pretty... She's, like, almost ready to...
He's going to cheat on her husband.
In the business, and then, yeah.
A dangerous man. We know he's a dangerous man. Yeah. She's ready to go and have this affair. And then Bond runs out the door. I don't know what she decided to stay or where did they find her body? Was it back at his house or?
Yeah.
I can't quite figure that one out in my mind, but yeah, unfortunately.
I don't mind Bond, you know, it's very Bond over the years. He gets people killed. I mean, like you said, Moonraker, Corin, you know, he just gets the information of her, says, take care of yourself. And then. Doesn't even won't even know that she's been killed in a dreadful way,
and it happens again in Skyfall.
That's awful.
Yeah, that is a terrible.
I don't like how that's done particularly, but
yeah, not good.
Right.
Going back to the airport and the chase there. When they get on the trucks, that whole sequence driving around the airport is so good, and every time I watch it, I keep thinking about Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, when Indy's on the truck and he's climbing over the truck, jumps into the front and gets I'm not going to say, is it as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark? Because that is sort of God tier level of filmmaking. But it is really good. And I'm watching it and thinking, bloody hell. And then there's that aeroplane that does the...
Yeah, that's so good.
Pushes the police cars away. Stunning.
Having that within an action scene, there's so many different bits to it. I actually think the fight in the truck just before, you know, he jumps out, that's such a good fight. Really frantic and kicking each other and sort of steering the car. And that really never gets mentioned in best fights of the series because it's within a much bigger action scene.
Yeah.
But I think quality. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I just think that I think you're right to say that whole chase sequence itself is often forgotten, but it is.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
It is, because the stuff in Madagascar is so good, and that is something we've never seen. And people just running and up cranes and jumping. And I know sort of the joke is that, it's funny because this guy's incredible at it, and Bond's not an expert at it, so he just sort of blunders his way through. He's like, he's still pretty impressive. The guy, he's still running on cranes and jumping around and landing, and then, oh, dear me.
Yeah.
He still comes out of it very well.
It is. It was amazing. And you say that we'd never seen anything like it before, to the point that it's so good, he has a specific call out in the opening titles.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Pre-running stunts, yeah. Fantastic.
Really, really good. Really good.
What do you think of... Do you understand poker, Chris? Because I don't.
I've got a very loose grasp on the game. My husband plays it regularly with his friends... back home would trounce at me every time we'd play. But I don't have that good a grasp on it, which is why it's René Mathis is so welcome as...
Yeah, yeah. Well, the people who know about poker, they complain like, oh, he's just commentating. He's
like, yes, and that is needed.
We need that. People need it, yeah.
Mathis exposition, I think, should be his
name. It is. It very much is. I didn't think it was... I thought it was more subtle watching it this last time than everybody says. I didn't think it was that bad. Because the dealer himself is describing, you know, like that, why that trumps that.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's doing the card sliding thing. And I think that is standard gameplay when when you're in the casino, exactly. Which obviously is great and that helps. But Rene's little comments of
Bond, no,
he now has to do this, or hell, or whatever. Maybe he is going to do it.
I know, no,
just
the tell. I mean, I'm not. Yeah, it's all very.
It's a gentle hand in the back of the small of your back, just pushing you forward along the plot, and that's fine. It's happened in other films, it'll happen again.
It's very difficult to stage a massive card game across different scenes in a Bond film and try and keep everybody interested. And obviously the way they do that is by, in between the cards, you've got Bond nearly dying, haven't you, being poisoned and everything.
Yeah.
And then you've got the scene, of course, with the fight in the stairwell, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. When they're talking through the game, you know, suddenly they say, "Oh, right, we've been playing for 4 hours. It's time to take an hour's break."
Yeah.
Again, it's the thing of, okay, what time did they start playing?
Yeah.
So we're well into midnight, like the early hours of the morning for the first game. And yeah, you need to take a break and give us some action. And that's, the way they've structured it is brilliant. And the threats,
it is.
I think it's the fact that the threats are coming not just to Bond, but to the Schiefer as well. When the general comes and gets his machete out with his girlfriend.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, oh my God, this is, you know, we think everything's going to be attacking Bond, but it's not. It's coming from all angles and it really keeps you on edge. It's, it's very well structured. And the poisoning of Bond later on effectively is replacing an element in the book, because Bond has been saved at that point by Felix, is being financed, at which point in the book, someone comes up behind Bond with gun hidden in a walking stick, puts it in the small of his back and says, "You will withdraw your bet or I will fire and I'll kill you." So you can't have that in the movie. That would just be a bit weird. So they've replaced it with this poisoning. And the filming of that even is terrific, because you go from the warm elegance of the casino room to the white bathroom, and it's all of these Dutch angles, and it's very grainy suddenly, and he's frantic, and it's a real stylistic change. Again, as we were saying earlier, was sort of stylistically changing from previous Bond films. This is just underlying that again. It's so jarring, but it works so well.
My only gripe is that why on earth did they choose that as the poster image? Bond, it's Bond staggering across across the road to get to the car, isn't it? If you think about the cover of the poster,
yes.
Film. You know, if it had a screenshot of him, then he's like,
"Here's your new Bond."
This is how we're going to introduce him.
She had a boyfriend, a French Algerian. They were very much in love. He was kidnapped by the organization behind Le Chiffre, and they blackmailed her, threatening to kill him unless she cooperated. We should have picked up on it, but sometimes we're so focused on our enemies, we forget to watch our friends. How are you doing?
She left her cell phone. She must have known I'd check it.
She knew you were you. Well, at least this clears Mathis.
No.
No?
No. We just proved that she's guilty, not that he's innocent. Could have been a double blind, keep sweating it.
You don't trust anyone, do you, James?
No.
Then you've learnt your lesson. Get back as soon as you can. We need you.
Will do.
If you do need time...
Why should I need more time? Job's done. The bitch is dead.
James, did you ever ask yourself why you weren't killed that night?
Isn't it obvious? She made a deal to spare your life in exchange for the money. I'm sure she hoped they would let her live.
But she must have known she was going to her death.
And now we'll never know who was behind this. The trail's gone cold.
In terms of Le Chiffre, while we've mentioned him, because we were Bond traditionalists, obviously, we were seeing it when you're like 18, 19, and then, probably a bit older, actually. And then it's like, oh, the main villain's just been killed. Hang on, what's going on?
Yeah.
It felt weird. It works within the story. Mr. White is like that background threat. And I just assumed, of course, he's he's either Blofeld or he is part of Spectre, but they just don't have the rights to say it.
Yeah.
So I don't mind them using Mr. White as Quantum equals Spectre. It was more the Silver was part of it as well, which is totally unnecessary.
Well, just while we're on Mr. Yes. White, him as a creation is terrific. And I think he is one of the strongest things to come from the whole Daniel Craig era. At the end of the film, when you see the guy with the eye patch, the black glasses, he is from the book as well. Vesper sees a man with an eye patch in the love story part of the plot, and that's when it all goes wrong. That's almost unnecessary. They could have used Mr. White a little bit more there, but he is absolutely fantastic. And I rue the fact that they killed him. I think they just to go off on a complete...
Bond fell in love with his daughter. Pardon? Bond fell in love with his daughter is the most...
Yeah, and I think they made a massive misstep, just to go on a complete tangent. At first, Spectre, they should have revealed that Mr. White is Blofeld.
Yeah, of course.
And then you get the drama of Bond being in love with his daughter, and how does that family dynamic work, or, you know, rather than killing him off and then making Blofeld his brother and then you're off.
Because you could have had the Christoph Waltz just as a normal bad below Blofeld, as it was always
and
done.
Reveal that Mr. White is Blofeld, and that would have been
amazing.
Of course, and then you would have had the full arc of he was there from the beginning.
Yeah, it would have made No Time to Die work a lot better as well.
Let's not get into that.
Okay, I just meant that horror pre-title scene thing.
Yes.
With masks and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes.
So,
he's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah. A fantastic actor. I think he's just marvellous, and I wish we'd have had more of him.
Because it's an unusual Bond character, because he's extremely menacing, but we actually almost feel a bit of sympathy by the end that, you know, you can see why this guy's so stressed. And that he needs to get this money. And obviously we'd rather Bond win the money, but heck, he's in real trouble here now, isn't he? There's so many questions I have. And in our review, I'm just getting tied in knots with how much Vesper knew and how much she was in on it. And for instance, when Bond's being tortured, she's in the next room. Is she actually being tortured, or is she being... Can you just scream so that Bond thinks she's being tortured?
Yeah. And... Well, I think she probably is being beaten around a bit because... she's going to need to be able to prove, although I was going to say
they might want her to get Bond to give her. I mean, it's the most obvious password ever. That's one of the funniest things I've ever
yeah
it might as well have been boobs or something like
that. Or password.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3 yeah. 4 I love that guy though. I love the Swiss banking guy.
Oh, yeah. The comic relief of...
yeah.
But it's not... Like, watching it, the whole thing about, oh, you didn't bring any chocolates with you. It's like, no.
Yeah,
it's not funny, but it is funny the way he giggles and sort of prances about the screen like some little gazelle. He's
imagine a Scottish guy gave him the thing. Oh, do you not bring any bagpipes with you?
Yeah, you get decked.
Yeah, So what is in the suitcase? Because if they've transferred the money, why is like Mr. White needing that? And why is he taking it to Como? And what's that about?
I think the suitcase was, I don't know, whether there's a check in there or there's actually currency, but
that represents
the money. You know, whoever's got the case has the cash.
I'm the money.
Every inch of it.
Well, no, every penny. Is that... Money Penny.
Yeah.
Again, my brain just, I can't.
Can't switch off.
I didn't mean she was Money Penny. So at the end, of course, Mr. White is looking on as he's been looking on in Venice the whole time. This is really annoying. Why does, it seems to be that he is then surprised to see Bond, and Bond is like, I'm James Bond, but we know who you are because I've been tracking you for the whole film, and you introduce yourself as Bond instead of Arlington Beach at the tables.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mr. White must have known about that. So why? I know it's just a catchphrase for the audience, but you need to speak to Harry about that. And goodness me,
more than likely.
Because he seems to think there's a massive thing on Mr. White's leg that you can tell he's going to be. that's going to explode when he gets shot.
The squib, yeah.
The squib, that's it. I was thinking of the word, well done. Anyway, Eva Green, Chris. Eva Green.
A brilliant bit of casting, and the chemistry that she and Daniel Craig have is just terrific.
I've heard a bit of criticism. I think some people say they don't buy how it quickly goes into I love you and all that over a couple of days, but I buy it all.
I buy it, and I think the moment that really sells it is the shower scene.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, she is a treasury agent.
Yes.
Who is just, you know, someone in an office behind a desk. She probably doesn't really get out of the office that much, doesn't go on missions like this. So to suddenly be in that kind of mortal danger and seeing someone killed, you know, she's tried to flick the gun away, Bond strangled this man, the other guy's fallen to his death, and she, you know, suddenly she realizes, God, this is real. I am in danger.
Yeah, yeah.
And she sits in the shower and is upset and distraught, and Bond comes and comforts her. And that is where what the psychological term is. It's not Stockholm syndrome, or it's, you know, there's that thing of she is now developing new emotions or new ways to deal with these emotions with him, and that is a real attachment. From there he chases after her when she's kidnapped, and the relationship just goes further. You know, he is her rescuer, even though he failed, but you know, he tried, so she sees it like that. Yeah, it's
little fingers. What do you think about this finger
finger sucking?
Wasn't there an original script? I think it was on Twitter that it made more sense that, you know, there was another line that were cut or something.
Okay. I hadn't heard about that.
It didn't seem as jarring this time, I have to say, when I watched it on the cinema. It didn't seem as random, because she just mentioned that she's got blood on her...
on her hands and fingers. Yeah.
Yeah. It's our sexual brains, isn't it?
I think what's most tender is the fact that they stay under the water together and he turns the heat up a little bit to keep them warm.
Yeah.
It's just really well shot. And then just the pullback, and the audience is just leaving them alone. Let them have their time. Yeah. I think their relationship builds perfectly. It's really, really good. Really well handled.
Do you think she's the best Bond girl of the Craig era?
Oh, possibly.
Well, who else is there?
Yeah, because Quantum, there isn't.
Madeleine?
No, don't be stupid. Yeah, I guess she is. She certainly looms the largest.
Yeah.
She casts a shadow over all of the other films that follow, so...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think she's absolutely terrific. I love Eva Green, and... I mean, I'm obviously madly in love with her, but that helps.
Oh, yeah. nudge you along a little bit more there.
Well, yeah. But I think she brings the best out of Daniel Craig as well. And that the train scene, it's good dialogue, it's good banter. Yeah. They're both a bit, you can tell that they're quite similar personalities, and that helps. But it helps you buy it.
And I know it's fairly obvious, but when I was watching it, my God, they just look so young. It just makes you realise.
Oh, yeah. They're very mature in terms of what they're saying, and they're at, you know, when I was that age, I was just a kid, I think, still, really. But yeah. They do sell it. And she was like early, mid-20s?
Something like that, yeah. I think. Really young.
Yeah.
Really young.
Still very well cast.
Yeah. It works perfectly. It really does. They're really, really strong. What are your thoughts on Le Chiffre himself as sort of...
Le Chiffre. Like I say, I was a bit annoyed that when I first saw it back in 2006, that the main baddie was killed by someone else very quickly. So I'm like, well, what's going on there? What's going to happen now? But within the story, and obviously in the book, you know, so I'm not going to, you can't go behind that. I really appreciate him as a character. Maybe if we'd seen him do a bit more naughtiness, you know, I always like to see the villain get his hands dirty. Maybe if you'd seen him kill somebody or chuck someone overboard. Like when I know he mentions that when he's having a card game with those two middle-aged people.
Yeah.
But, well, pensioners really, aren't they? And then she's back at the game, isn't she? The woman. That is her, isn't it? Yeah. And from You Only Live Twice. Yeah, good trivia. Yeah, I know. I think he's fantastic. I love Mads Mikkelsen as an actor. Hannibal with him in his terrific.
Oh, yeah.
And He's been in two brilliant Danish films that I've watched quite recently. Another Round.
Yes.
He's absolutely terrific. And Riders of Justice, which is one I haven't heard of.
I haven't heard of that.
And it's another Danish film. Really, really recommended. He's like a chap who's a bit emotionally detached. For some reason, he gets involved in trying to have vengeance against these other criminals. There's actually a bit of comedy in it. It's really okay. Well done. Definitely watch that one. I thought it was unbelievable.
Keep my eyes open for that.
I think he's great.
I think he is super cool. Perfect casting. Mads Mikkelsen is just this formidable power. He just sort of radiates this doom and menace. And it's wonderful. And I think that potentially they overdid his styling a little bit. The blood eye, an asthma pump, a scar. I don't think it needed it. It just...
His face is enough and his presence, right.
It's just so menacing. He could have carried it off. And super cool as well. Like the way he sat at the table playing cards and he's flicking his just with a little click, 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 click. I mean, whenever I watched it, it was like Iceman in Top Gun, the first one. They're eyeballing each other and he's just got his pen and he does this... Ralph Gilmore does this weird thing with his pen. It just looks really cool.
It is. It's that masculinity, isn't it? Trying to show your strength where you can without giving anything away. And no, it's very well done. I do think that the casino scene... I think Felix could have been in it a bit more. That was one of the... I'm glad he... To be fair, No Time to Die, I did think that was his best... Well, it was his longest stint. And the scenes with him and the other CIA chap at the bar in No Time to Die were a bit more... I can buy their friendship now. Yeah. You know, I get this. There is more banter here. I know he'd only just met him in Casino Royale, it's because he hadn't been in since Quantum.
Yeah.
And you're asking the audience to 13 years on buy this banter.
Is it really 13 years between?
Yeah. From Quantum and No Time to Die. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
But he was good. He's well cast.
Yes, yes. He's a terrific
more likeable.
It's just that thing you want great. More from him. You just want to hear, just want more screen time.
He could have had a few chats maybe after their initial conversation. You're right, mate, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you want a drink? So where is it in your rankings then?
I had a look the other day just to see. And in the sorter that ranks things for us, it's about middle.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sort of upper middle. So sort of... 13, 14, 15.
Oh, I've never heard that.
So it's outside of the top. It's outside the top 10, but it's sort of solid up there. And it didn't really move from the first time I did it to then a couple of years later when I did it again. It was still in the same place. So
okay, but you know, mid-tables. It sounds mediocre. No, we love all these films.
Oh, absolutely. It's a solid middle ground, and. You know, that's a good, safe place to be.
Because it always now wins, usually, these polls of Bond fans as the best one, doesn't it? It seemed, when they did the one a couple of years ago on Twitter, where everybody sent in the rankings, and I thought maybe Honor Majesty's would be only the one who might be able to topple it, possibly From Russia With Love. I think they might have been the top three.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you could say those three are all the more... serious Fleming in inverted commas.
But
it's quite interesting, isn't it? I think if you ask the general public, I think Skyfall is far more popular with the general public than Casino Royale. And I know it was at the box office and everything, but it stood the test of time, and we've seen the numbers, haven't we, that have been very strong for it. It's been the most popular.
Yeah.
But I think Skyfall will be even more popular.
In years to come.
Even more people.
Well, it's...
On this Bond on the big screen run. I think it will be.
Oh, yeah, certainly in this run, it's more and more people are going because they're the most recent films. I think...
Yeah, I prefer Casino Royale. That's right.
Sort of in general, if you talk to sort of general public about sort of Bond rankings, I think Casino Royale is definitely up there because so many people have seen it and it still gets such a large amount of airtime. Certainly, its original cinematic release was very strong. When it came out on Blu-ray, everyone had a copy of it.
Yeah.
It's almost...
And
you know.
Harry will say he was annoyed because it wasn't in the same... it wasn't in the same Bond collection thing because it's nothing to do. It's a new.
It's
thing.
An extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Harry had the Bond DVDs lined up on the.
Oh, is that the one with the where the spines all?
Yeah, it's so nice. But then he had the Casino Royale in it, just with all the normal films in the normal film. He was being very cheeky, but
infuriating.
Yeah, under sea, didn't it? Let's glory, yes.
So yeah, so it's had this sort of good cinematic release, a great Blu-ray release, and now you turn on ITV3, it's always on. So why is it not? Is, you know, it everyone.
It's not a Sunday afternoon Bond, but it's always on. Yeah, you are right. I've got to tell you this. So I said I need to tell you a funny story that happened at the cinema. So I got there. It was at Rochdale, where I've only seen Live and Let Die before, and it's great. It's an Odeon. You get there. Mrs. Harris Paris wasn't on, unfortunately. During the trailers, I was basically trying to post that I was there for the socials, and I was just about to. I'd done most of it, and then there's no signal whatsoever. So I was like, the film had started, and I was like, oh, I can't. I need to just press, please, you know, like this. So I was one of those annoying guys who had the phone out, and I didn't want to go out because I was like, I can't miss this. And then I just got a tap on my shoulder, these two guys, like, can you either put your phone away or can you sit somewhere else? So I was like, I was sort of stunned. I was like, to be fair, they're probably right, you know, to be fair. So I sort of passively aggressively just sort of ran in the seat behind them. And sat behind them for the entirety. But after my shock had subsided, I thought, you know, it was fairly, you know, I think it was a guy and his dad who was fairly old. I thought, bless them, you know, they've come to watch this Bond film, the Bond fans. So at the end of them, I went up to them and said, I'm really sorry about that. That was poor form. I agree. I don't like people messing about. I explained I was just trying to send this thing. And they were really nice. And we had a great chat about the film. They'd been to every single one. In the same cinema. I've seen all of them. Yeah, told me about the podcast. So.
Did you record them for the podcast? Are they?
I didn't know. No, I thought that would be a bit too. I was overly nice with them, though, and I hope they're listening. And I apologise once more. You were in the room.
There you are.
They were definitely. They were. But I think we're all friends.
Good.
And then there was another guy who randomly posted on the picture to say, yeah, how weird was it that. And yes, during the last scene. The very last scene, the name is Bond, James Bond. The lights went up.
Oh.
The lights went up. It was so annoying, yeah. And this guy had posted, didn't know that I'd been at the screening, and he said, yeah, at hour one in Rochdale, it was so annoying, the lights went up. I was like, what are the chances? I was there as well. and he's like, well, yeah, what are the chances? I didn't know that. And so what the Rochdale screening, this guy didn't follow us, never heard of us, for some reason commented on this. And yeah, he so that was another because I think there were only about five of us there. So
you should have all sat together and had a nice old nice old time.
And I've forgotten that there's a reprise of the You Know My Name in the end credits.
Yes.
Because we were saying it's a shame that they've lost the second song at the end because, you know, for World Is Not Enough, it would have been Only Myself to Blame, but it was a bit of a down, wasn't it? I love the song, but it wouldn't have been right at all at the end. Christmas comes once a year, then. I knew it was. So, I don't know. They should do another song, surely, if they're going to have one in the end credits. It's a great chance for a new Bond song to go in. But I love the song, by the way. I absolutely love it.
Oh, You Know My Name is
an
absolute banger. Yeah. I must admit, I was never really keen on it. And then recently it's gone up in my estimation. And certainly last night watching it, as I said, going from black and white into colour and the really strong guitar and it was really, really good.
And it's upbeat and it's the only real... Okay, we have the duet afterwards, the Quantum of Solace. But
magnificence.
I know we discussed that, but I just prefer those. You know, because everybody has a downer on... Moonraker, For Your Eyes Only, All Time High, because they're a bit, you know, they're just ballads, aren't they? You know, and then when it gets to A View to a Kill, yes. Yet the last three have been dreary ballads and everyone loves it.
Yeah.
I say everyone loves them. I don't think everyone loves the Sam Smith. I actually don't. I find it funny, so I now like it.
No.
That's the...
No, I did catch a clip of it on the radio the other day. I was just like, yeah, this really...
Oh, really?
This really is bad. It's just...
But yes.
As you say, dreary is the word. Having said that...
Derivative.
Mentioning Moonraker, I think, and this may be controversial, but I think the disco version at the end of Moonraker is the superior version. And if someone could lay that track over the opening titles for me and put that on Twitter, please, that would be magnificent.
I love them both. You are right, but at least you get a different version of it at the end, and it's a bit more upbeat, isn't it? Well, Dine of the Day, we have the silly dance version of a dance song, which is dated a lot. I love the original, as I've said, but... that version was a bit too far for me. So great, Chris. Are you going to bother watching Quantum of Solace? Or
I will. I will. I think I will. Now I've seen this, and it's certainly take it as a part two to Casino Royale, not as a Bond film in its own.
Yes, absolutely.
As a description, maybe doing it a disservice, but certainly if you watch one after the other, it really works. Watch it on its own as a standalone, and it's too clunky. What's going on? Who are all these people? As a part two, it's really, really good.
And it'll be interesting to see this Daniel Craig journey one week after the other with Skyfall departs a bit, but the other, it's all in the same sort of world and the same storyline threads running through. And it'll be good to, you know, I've seen No Time to Die twice at the cinema, but I haven't seen it since. So it'll be weird that the third time I see it will be again at the cinema.
You've only ever seen it at the cinema.
We'll have to do a series, No Time to Die, on the small screen for once.
I don't think it'll get any better smaller.
That's what she said. What he said.
Just saying on the run of the things, though, that Spectre takes sort of Skyfall, takes a step apart. We've had that before. Because Dr. No leads into From Russia with Love, a movie.
Yes,
you know, Blofeld says, "Oh, we need to take revenge on Bond."
Yeah, and he mentions Jamaica, I think, doesn't he?
Our man in Jamaica, and then for Goldfinger, it is a completely standalone thing.
Yeah,
so it would have been great. It would have been great if they'd have just left Skyfall as a standalone, rather than retrofitting and shoehorning it.
Because it works for Mr. White, and it works for Le Chiffre, and it works for Dominic Green. That's it.
Just leave it. Anyway.
Silver's motivations are completely personal. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, that isn't Skyfall's fault, as I keep saying, and it isn't Casino Royale's fault where we end up at the end of No Time to Die.
No, but it is Purvis and Wade's fault. And there is a special level in Dante's Hell waiting for them. But I think that's a story for another time.
It is. Maybe by the end of these five, I'll be ready to forgive them. Who knows?
You're a more forgiving man than I.
You did The World Is Not Enough and Dine of the Day, so.
Yeah, there is some good in them. But that was a very, very long time ago.
It is. We're getting old.
Yeah.
Superb, Chris. I'm glad you've enjoyed it. And we will move on to Quantum of Solace. I think we're going to get a very mixed bunch of reviewers for that one, compared to this one anyway. But I think it's getting a lot of love on Twitter, and it's being reappraised. So I'm hoping for more of the same from the fans.
So do we think Quantum of Solace is going to have the same sort of mixed bag reappraisal as Die Another Day?
Die Another Day was way more positive. The people were sending the thoughts.
Yeah.
And maybe that is because I don't want to send in 10 minutes of me ragging on it and saying how pathetic it is. The people, I suppose, who are passionate about it are going to want to tell us. I think nobody was. It's like, if you've made the effort to go and watch Dine of the Day at the cinema, you can't hate it. Unless you're just a completist who has to see them all, which is fair enough.
As you say, a completist or a sadist?
A sadist? Both.
Bit of both, yeah.
Hello?
Mr. White, we need to talk.
Who is this?
The name's Bond. James Bond.
Really, Douglas.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.